Here we go. Maria, take it away.
Welcome to Sticky Pickles. Ever found yourself stuck in a pickle, knee deep in a dilemma? Question is, what do you do now? I'm Maria.
I'm Carol. And this is season 2, episode 24 of Sticky Pickles. Not a great fit and Bad Birdie part 2. Maria, we don't have a guest today. We don't have to be apologetic about that, do we?
No, I think we're a treat enough for
exactly.
We're more than we're enough, like, right?
It's like we're like a double dessert instead of a trio.
Oh, now I'm sad. I want that third scoop of ice cream.
I know. But we're going to get it through your story, Maria.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about your sticky pickle.
Okay, so there's only one hero of my story, and it's a guy named James. And this is awkward because I have a friend named James. You knew a James. I know a James. It's not this James.
It's not the James. James, if you're listening, it's not you.
It's not you. It's not you. I just needed a name, James. It's not you.
They just live in your neighborhood, in your house. They're your age, but it's not you.
It's not you. You know, maybe I should pick a different name for this story. Because I'm going to keep thinking of him, and I'll be like, I'm slandering him
okay.
with the story.
What about Steven?
Steven. That's a great name. Okay, so it's not James, it's Steven.
Okay, so we have one character, a solo hero named Steven.
Solo hero named Steven.
Okay.
And Steven had kind of a rough start out of the gate of his adult life. He graduated his university. He did okay. He went to mid-tier university. His first job out of college was like a barista at Starbucks while he was trying to get his feet
under. That's a lot of people, though, seriously.
It is. It's like most people that I know.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking down about it. It's just, just the reality.
And it most sucks, people- though. It sucks because you're thinking, I have like 40,000 freaking loans, $40,000 worth of loans to pay. And I'm making it with a Frappuccino.
And a degree in adaptive psychology.
No yes, right.
Weird that I can't find a job in that, but legit, like I have a degree in journalism, so I understand. It's like the jobs are not there. So Steven's working in his barista job, and he's at it for a year, 2 years, mm-hmm. 3 years, going, you know, I think college was nice and all, but maybe I need to retrain. So.
Right, like it's not working for him. He's not climbing the ladder. He's not joined management at Starbucks.
Well, no, he's also got like 20 roommates and, you know, the cockroach situation is getting a little out of hand. So he's like, you know what? Maybe I need to think about switching careers to something a little more lucrative.
Yeah.
So he manages to change his shifts around at Starbucks and he starts doing night classes and starts picking up programming. He's the stereotypical, I guess, guy who learns programming thing. But like he picks it up. Like a lot of people do manage to do it with night classes, and Steven's one of those guys.
Yep.
And at the end of it, after like 2 years of night classes, Steven has a certificate in like basic web development, like programming related to web development. I'm trying to keep this as untechnical as possible.
Yeah, and he's like skilled, right? I'm guessing he's skilled now. Like he can do stuff. He understands it. He's meshed.
He could totally get a job. So keep in mind, his only professional experience before this new certificate of his has been barista work. So he's starting to think about making his career change, and he's starting to apply for jobs like entry level, like web development, programming jobs. And he's going into these interviews and he's getting a lot of rejections because I guess he's still new to this world. He can't talk the talk. He doesn't know what to say. So he posts on.
Yeah, that's hard though, eh? Because the talking the talk is a big thing. And like if you kind of go in and it's actually a barrier to lots of professions if you don't have the keywords, because you might have an interviewer that uses all these acronyms and you're like, don't understand what that is. And then they explain it, but they look at you like, how could you not know that? And you're like screwed based on that.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a huge barrier. And it's not that he doesn't have the technical knowledge. He does. It's just that sounding like the right kind of candidate. So Steven starts basically going on forums, like programmers. There's a lot of forums where like programmers tend to like
not Quora, right?
Not Quora. No, no, no.
Like
no,
real like, forums, crawl.
And not Reddit either, although Reddit, you know, but there are just like forums where people exchange war stories kind of thing. And it's not just talking about code, but also like things that they did at work and how they solved certain problems.
Yeah. Community online. Yeah.
Yeah. And he posts a thread at one point going, you know, I'm trying to get a job in X. And he details the type of work he wants to get. And he's going, I'm just not getting any luck in these interviews. Does anybody have any tips on how I can, like, get in the door? And people are giving him all this great advice about, like, sound like the job you want to get. And you know, here's some great
coaching. Do some research before you go into the interview. Here's some, like, key questions they might ask you.
That's
that kind
right.
of stuff.
Here's some links to some blogs that talk about how to coach yourself specifically for a technical type of interview. And also people are sharing these great anecdotes about, oh yeah, this one time when I was in an interview, this one guy posts, for example, you know, I was telling them about this time I had to solve this really nasty technical problem. And then the guy details this technical problem that they fixed and says how they then resolved it. And the commenter concludes, like, you know, that story was very convincing. And, you know, I'm really glad I shared it. So, you know, Stephen, you should do something similar. You should tell them about a problem that you solved at work. That'll really help them understand how good you are at this kind of thing.
Can I make a prediction?
No!
Okay.
No, you may not.
Okay, I will not. I will wait. I am waiting patiently.
I know you know where this is going. I don't know
if I am. Okay.
So Steven's like, that's a really great idea. And it's not like I don't have project management and crisis management skills because being a barista for 3 years at Starbucks, you deal with a lot of assholes.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a transferable skill. Legit.
100%. 100%. 100%.
It is.
I worked at Tim Hortons. Okay. Like, I get it.
Oh, bless.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So, yeah, I know.
What do you guys call the donut holes?
Tim Bits.
Tim Bits, thank you. I was like, it's a super cute name and I can never remember it. And
yeah,
I just,
not Tim Butts.
Tim Butts is their cigarette
brand. If you put two together.
Okay, I'm doing that next
TM
time.
TM Crawltario.
That's amazing. Tim Butts, you heard it here first. Tim Bits is so cute. So Steven gets an interview at a job and he's regaling them with his, you know, transferable skills from the Starbucks days, and he's acing the technical interview. Like, he's writing the code on the whiteboard. He knows his shit. He's impressing everybody. And he gets to the point where they're like, well, should we also talk about salary? And they're talking numbers, and Steven's like, you know, in his head, I was going to ask for X, but I think I'm really nailing this interview, so I'm going to ask for, like, X times 2. He's doubling the amount of money that he's asking for.
Okay.
And you know what? They flinch a little bit when he says a number, which is usually a good sign that he's asking for something that's not, like, bottom of the barrel, usually.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they're like, we'll see what we can do about that. And he's like, yeah. And then the interview gets to an interview question because they haven't finished yet. And he goes, you know what? I forgot to ask this one. And you're doing so well that we just got kind of caught up in things. But, you know, I need to ask this one for the sake of, you know, for the hiring manager. Could you tell me sometime about when you solved, like, a really nasty technical problem? And Steven goes, sure.
I have one on the tip of my tongue. Let me tell you what happened.
Let me proceed to basically, as you probably predicted, recite exactly what that guy commented on my post, because I have no relevant technical stuff. So he lies.
Okay.
Steven lies.
Well, does he? Okay. We'll talk about that in a second. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So he basically steals the story and presents
it. He steals the story. And it's a pretty impressive story, too. He gets the job.
Yeah, for the
two times the salary. Now, this is a big deal. And then I'm not, and, you know, this is a junior level position, but it's still, like, a huge, huge uplift from where he was. So, like, he's beside himself. So he gets the job pending reference checks.
This is not a wanking story. It's not going down that
There's
route,
no-
right? Okay.
Why would there be masturbation in my school?
Where? I don't know. I thought you'd be celebrating or something. Or, I don't know. I just thought we'd pivot. I'm waiting for a weird, crazy pivot.
To me, the weird, crazy pivot is not really weird and crazy. It is the sticky. It's a career pickle. Sometimes we have relationship pickles, you know, kid pickles. This is a career pickle.
Exactly. No, I'm being very serious. Yes.
He's got the job. He's got the offer. Like, we have to just get through the formalities of just checking your references. And you know they're going to corroborate stories. So the sticky pickle is this. Does Steven come clean that he lied? Does he prep his reference by telling them about, like, trying to kind of plant a story? Or does he just hope that it doesn't come up and nobody catches him on his lie?
Good one, Maria.
Thank you. It's a legit sticky pickle, but there's no wanking in it. I'm very was that a requirement? I missed
no!
that one. Are we talking about other kinds of sticky pickles?
Wait till you get to my story.
Oh, no. I'm the palate cleanser before we get to the real dish is what I'm hearing. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm putting myself in Steven's skin. Okay. So I've lied. I've basically stolen someone else's drama, but it worked for me. I'm now getting 2 times the salary.
You lied in a job interview. Maybe I didn't emphasize enough. This was not like a small lie. This was like it put him over the top. This was basically the thing that kind of cinched it. He was doing really well, and then he slam dunked the basketball with that lie.
So, okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Pros, he understands what a sticky situation sounds like, right? Because he recognized it and was able to repeat it in a way that was convincing to his senior management team.
Yes, he's very good at lying. This is true.
Well, not lying, but like he repeated the facts of the story. He's appropriated the story that doesn't belong to him. That's the big fucking lie.
So it's a cultural appropriation story is what I'm hearing. This is a very woke episode of Sticky Pickle.
I'm so woke. Is he likable? Like, do I imagine working with this guy? Because, you know, people say that shouldn't matter and it doesn't matter. It fucking matters. I really think it matters because even if you think you're not being, you know, biased in a certain way, if someone's just unlikable to the point where you're just like, ugh, I don't, you know.
Yeah, I would say, so in this case, Steven is likable because, I mean, it's not a guarantee you're going to be a likable barista. So it has nothing to do with his previous job. He's a likable person. Like, when he's going in these interviews, people are going, I would like to work with him, but I don't know if he has the technical or like project management chops.
But and he does have the technical chops, right?
He does. He was able to prove the technical chops. It was the more like problem solving in a professional context chops, which usually only comes with experience, which is why this shit pisses me off because it's an entry level job. But anyway.
I'm 100% with you with that. Were I the boss or the person hiring him, right, in this situation, and I found out he bullshitted himself through that component, but that I had faith that he understood the technical stuff based on his answers, blah, 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 I'd probably give him a punt. But I would do it with my eyes open, like aware that he's happy to appropriate, right? So I would then go down the whole journalist route of, I need 2 pieces of evidence to believe anything you tell me.
Okay. Wow. So I guess because it's in this case, Steven is going for like an entry level job. It's kind of like you can look the other way because it's entry level and be like, okay, he lied. But a lot of people at entry level have like a very thin resume. So it's not the biggest thing. Although we would have preferred if he was honest, but maybe we can assume that a lot of people lie in interviews. So like maybe we can forgive it. I'm going to just throw a hypothetical out there just because I'm curious. If he was applying for like a really senior level job, if he was more experienced. Like, forget that he's entry-level barista, whatever. Pretend he was going, he's 15, 20 years in his career.
He's going for CEO. Yeah, right. Or VP.
No, not CEO. Maybe he's or just like a senior role, like 15 years experience or more. Would that have mattered if he lied as more because he's more senior?
To me, totally.
Yeah, because I
think kids are told all the time, and I hate it, fake it till you make it. And I hate that because I think kids should come in and go, I know fuck all, but this is what I do know. And then you'd be like, wow, okay, I'll fill the gaps. Fantastic. We don't have to go through all the bullshit of you pretending you know something and I have to not hurt your feelings by not knowing blatantly you don't know this, but have to teach you without insulting you. Like, it's a horrible thing to do.
Yeah, so we have to make them jump through hoops, but
I think they're told to fake it till they make it, and that sucks. Now, if you're like 20 years in the job and you know that, and you're slaloming your way through your career, and you're just bullshitting to get more money, you kind of go in the like you might
That'll
win,
follow
but
you.
Do you
yeah.
win? Like you're, yeah. you know, like so enjoy your Cristal champagne, and it'll all be great for you.
Unless you're gambling that no one will ever find out, which some people do until you're their coworker. And then you're like, oh, this guy doesn't know shit. Not that that's happened to me or anything.
I've known people who've bullshitted their way through most of their career, but they're actually smart and they know their onions and they could actually they can tread water in the positions that they found themselves in a way that is good for whatever people that are reliant upon them. But I've also seen the opposite, right?
Yes,
I've seen like the floundering VPs of hell and you're just like, oh my God, how did you ever fake your way into this? And this must be hell for you.
The Peter principle of like failing upwards until.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It almost becomes a thing you admire when someone clearly has bullshitted their way into a job, but like their ability to bullshit so well is actually the skill that they needed for that job, then you're like, as yeah. long as you can say things that convince other people to do the work for you, welcome to management.
Yeah, or you, yeah, you're selling our products in a way, even though you don't understand how the technology works.
You don't okay. understand the technology at all. Yeah. Oh my God, this is now tech. You know what? Maybe we should win that cybersecurity award. We should.
Yeah, we should. Fingers crossed.
I mean, no, we haven't told them about it. We'll tell them later.
After.
We'll
tell them after.
Curl. So what is your sticky pickle? And I'm dying to hear the continuation of last week's story, so lay it on me. Oh my God, your anticipation's killing me. Okay.
Okay, so listeners, if you didn't listen last week, go back, okay? Because this is a part two of an episode called Bad Birdie. But I'll do a little quick refresher on the characters, right? Just so
yes,
everyone's
please.
On page.
You know, I lost my post-it note from last week because there were like four characters, right?
I know. Okay, right, so we have Chloe. We have all Chloe, right. Okay, 20-something-year-old daughter.
Sorry.
We have Serge and Orla, Chloe's parents.
Okay.
Are you getting a stapler out?
No, my damn pen's not working. Come on. Time's ticking. Oh, my God. This is so awful. Come on. All right. I'm getting a Sharpie, one of those huge fat Sharpies.
Yes. Okay. Good. Great. That's great.
Okay. So
Chloe, Serge and Orla, and we have Birdie, Chloe's new, much older and unique, shall we say, girlfriend. Do you remember where we were when we were...
You want me to summarize?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, Chloe is the young ingenue sleeping with her board member, Birdie, at the place where she worked, at the museum.
Yeah.
À la musée. I only do that because of your French-Canadian-ness. And
mais oui. C'est bien.
It's like, I'm just flexing.
It's working, baby.
And Serge and Orla are kind of understanding the dynamic here where Birdie is clearly preying on someone way too young for her. And Dad especially. Well, actually, Dad and Mom both are like, this is not okay. And I feel like, and then we went off the rails last week going whether or not we would hit Chloe with a baseball bat or Birdie with a baseball. I don't know. It got weird.
It got weird.
But TLDR, Birdie's like twice Chloe's age, like literally. Not half her age plus seven, but like...
Exactly. Yeah,
correct. Okay.
Perfect.
Oh, great. Okay.
And the only other thing I would add to that is that Orla, we left Orla fuming. She's the mom, right? She's fuming. She's just like... And Serge is a little speechless, but he's a bit of a milquetoast, right?
So right. That's right.
So he's not saying much.
I'm still taking the notes here.
I love it. But Orla is fuming, okay? Because neither had Birdie in mind when they were thinking about who their daughter might fall in love with, right? She just is not... fit the mold at all, even
because Birdie's gross, right? Like Birdie's, it's not just the age thing, and it's actually the age is kind of secondary. It's more that Birdie is really gross.
Well,
like slimy.
She certainly made Mom very freaking uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a few days after the dreaded Zoom call that we experienced in part one, okay? And Orla is basically planning for a way to expose, not trick, but expose Birdie's, you know, true colors, right? Because she's convinced she likes the younger girls. Right? And and Orla is convinced that her daughter is not seeing this. And after, you know, a bit of to-ing and fro-ing, they figure it out because Chloe's 22nd birthday is coming up. And they tell Chloe, we want to throw you a little quiet dinner party and get to know Birdie.
All right.
And so Chloe brings this up to Birdie. And Birdie is like both shocked and thrilled because she wasn't sure they actually liked her very much, right?
Birdie's like, the parents usually don't care for me. I don't know why. But generally, they give me the cold shoulder.
So Chloe and Birdie get all dolled up for the dinner. And, you know, it's her birthday the next day. So, you know, a pre-birthday dinner party thing. And they arrive. And the door is locked. Okay? The door's never fucking locked. So she rings the bell like a stranger. And a panicked mom answers the door. And she rushes them in. She goes, hurry. Come in. And so Birdie and Chloe rush in. And then it's like, surprise! And, like, everyone is there. So okay. Chloe's besties are there, her oldest best friends, her cousins, everyone's dolled up. There's Champagne Tower, for God's sake.
Oh, my God.
And there's Chloe's favorite food that's always there on her birthday, mini egg rolls. She loves them.
Okay. Classy affair. All right.
Okay. So it's kind of like a whirlwind, right? They kind of just get into the melee and they're kind of like rocked in and party's in full swing and everyone's jumping over Chloe and meeting Birdie. And the thing is Orla's plan wasn't one full of goodness. Orla.
Yeah, I kind of figured that. Okay.
So Orla has basically got this tower of Prosecco, fake champagne. But
I actually really care for it. I do care for the Prosecco. We love it. Thank you.
Yes, me too. And she's got Serge to serve plenty of Prosecco to Birdie, right?
That was going to go straight to your head.
Yeah, because she's thinking she's invited Chloe's hot cousin. And she's just hoping, and Chloe's hot cousin just randomly wants to get into the museum business as well. So this is kind of like a win-win for Orla.
She's planted some bait.
She's planted some bait.
Wow, that's kind of fucked up, but okay.
Right?
Serving up her niece.
But she's thinking, this is how everyone gets out, win-win-win. Like, Birdie shows her true colors. Chloe still loves her family and know that, you know, and has all her friends around her during the drama. Like, this is how Orla's thinking this. This is, you know, this is going to work. This is going to work.
Okay.
So Orla finds the cousin, right? Brings her over to introduce her to Birdie, who's, like, holding an empty glass.
Is the cousin, is she also interested in women? Like, would she potentially be making a move on Birdie?
Maybe.
Oh, okay, maybe. That's
yeah,
okay,
maybe. Okay. I don't think it matters when you have...
It doesn't matter when you're rich. Okay, got it. Yep.
Look, she's free, okay? Don't nail her sexuality down.
Yeah.
No, I don't have no idea. Okay. So maybe she is, maybe she's not. But her mom is thinking, this is going to work. She just wants Birdie to make a fool of herself. She wants Birdie to show her true colors, that she's obviously likes all the young girls, and she'll see her flirting with her, and then maybe...
Flirting with her, and then Chloe gets jelly? Okay.
Yes. Yep. And then say... Right? Who would do that to you?
You dog! You, how could you do that to me at my birthday party?
Serge never did that to me, darling. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't like it.
And so Birdie's holding an empty glass. She's already downed a glass or two. Perfect, thinks Orla. Mm-hmm. And she's like, why don't you two go on the patio now that you've met? Have a nice chat. Birdie, you will love her.
And she wants a job at your museum.
Exactly. All that stuff. So, okay, if you were Orla's buddy... At this point, you're hanging out at the party, right?
Orla's buddy, as in this is the cousin?
The mom's buddy.
Oh, just like a random hanger-on. Okay, gotcha. Okay, yes, like a witness.
You've been invited to the party, right? Yeah. You're one of her friends, and you've been invited.
It's like a wedding.
It's totally like a wedding. And, you know, if Orla confided you in this point, what about her plan? What would you tell her? Would you think this is good, or...
Okay, all right. I will tell you legit. I would be like, this won't work. And I would say this won't work the way you think it's going to. However, if it means, it's like, okay, I've got so many thoughts about this. This party makes me think of the phrase malicious compliance. You want me to get along with your girlfriend? Fine, we'll get along with her. And I'll make sure your cousin gets a job out of it.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like, I'm going to throw you the best fucking party, whether you like it or not. And then your cousin's going to get a job. You know, if we have to have this terrible Birdie hanging around us, I'm going to make sure we get something useful out of her.
Yeah. And she probably wants Birdie with the cousin rather than her daughter at this stage, right? Because.
Boy, that part bothers me, though. Like, ugh.
Yep.
I would say if mom doesn't want Birdie around, pawning her off on the cousin is not far enough away.
She and her sister are not friends, can I just say.
Oh, she doesn't care for her niece? Care for her.
You know, she likes her niece a bit, but doesn't like her sister who borned her. Okay.
If you don't like Birdie, pawning her off on niecey is not an act of kindness in this
case. No.
But I guess child versus niece, oh man, I don't like that decision, but okay.
Anyway, Orla says, thanks so much, Maria, for your feedback.
Get out. Yeah.
And she goes back to curtain twitching, right, from the living room, checking out on the cousin and Birdie outside, who seem to be getting along amazingly well.
Yeah.
Perfect, Orla thinks again, right? But then she realizes the room is both kind of quiet and loud at the same time. Like, you know, that sound of panic. Orla turns around and she sees Chloe. She can't fucking, she's turning like, you know, all kind of colors of not natural color, skin color. And Orla, like everybody else, can't believe it. Everyone's like rushing over and asking her if she's okay. She can't answer you. She's choking. Can I just say, people who do that, don't do that.
She's clearly choking. Yes. Oh my God.
Right? But she needs help.
She's choking. Heimlich maneuver literally right now.
Chloe's looking at them, waving her hands frantically, like not answering them. And then suddenly, you know, you hear Orla wailing, Serge, Serge, do something. But then behind her, we hear someone say, stand back. And it's Birdie, right? Who's literally swinging over the four-seater couch as though she's mounting a Shetland pony. Okay? And she forcibly moves everyone out of the way. And she goes, everyone stand back. And she points at the girl in blue and she goes, call the ambulance. And she points at Orla and she goes, get everyone to stand back. And she rushes to Chloe. Is she now? Chloe's like blue now, bit, right? Purpley blue.
I'm invested. Oh my God. My palms are sweaty.
she grabs little Chloe by the shoulders and she goes, I'm going to do the Heimlich maneuver on you. Nod if you know what that is. You know, Chloe nods and Birdie just whips her around, grips her hands into a fist under her rib cage and counts down 3, 2, 1. And then there's like a bit of chomped egg roll that flies across the room in a high arc.
Someone in the forehead.
It hits chandelier and it drops on the floor like a thud, you know.
Oh, God.
And Chloe chokes and sputters and catches her breath. And she goes, whoa, that was close, guys. And everyone laughs. And it's like, you know, in the movies, the music starts again. Everyone starts kind of boogieing again and talking. That's kind of what happens.
Is this your pitch for a TV show? Is there a manuscript you've slipped under some network exec's door and you're like, I got this thing. This is a straight up episode of TV on this podcast.
Okay.
I'm amazed.
But we're getting to the sticky pickle bit now. Okay.
Yeah, is there?
Yeah. Because you're still right near Orla, right? Because she was curtain and you've watched all this and Orla just looks at you. And what do you do now? Like, so.
Go check on your daughter who almost died, Orla. Jesus fucking Christ. She may still need medical attention. Also, I'm sure she was terrified. She might want her mummy.
Can you be a mom, Orla, for God's sake?
Like for like 5 seconds instead of being a machinating bitch. Is that a
yes?
Macerating? No, macerating.
Masochistic, masochistic, masochistic. I can't even talk anymore.
Massachusetts. What is
Mississippi? Okay. So right, as you yell at Orla, like the amount of emotion she just went through, she just starts blubbing. Okay. Literally blubbing.
Yeah.
And who is it but Birdie who pushes you aside, Maria, and comes over and goes, Orla, that was really fucking scary. I'm so glad I could help. And hugs Orla.
Aww.
Right. Right. And suddenly, according to Orla, Birdie's hair wasn't so tufty. Her skin was not so sallow. Her nose not so big.
And suddenly Orla's like, I think I like women now. And Birdie and Orla run off.
Fuck you, Serge. I'm out of here.
That ends up now they're a couple. And you didn't see that twist coming, did you?
Exactly.
Because Orla and Birdie are the same age. So it's an appropriate romantic relationship. And this is the way to... So, Orla steals her daughter's girlfriend. There's nothing wrong with that.
But it's hard, yeah, right? Okay. Because she does not fit at all. Birdie does not fit at all into the stereotype of any kind of dimensions that Orla wanted for her daughter.
Yeah, deal with it.
Yeah, but somehow, though, when it came to it, like, everyone else was, like, freaking out and asking if she's okay, and someone, you know, or, you know, I don't know. Does your mind change? You think, actually, Orla, maybe you're good for her?
I would be feeling a lot of gratitude for saving her life. There's no doubt about it.
But stop fingering my daughter.
I think we should end the episode right there. I really do.
That's it for this week's Sticky Pickles. If we made you smile, you know what to do. Subscribe and review.
wait, 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 wait. Oh, wait, are we really leaving it there? Is there a part three to the story? I think there needs to be because I am not satisfied by that ending at all.
Oh, my God.
You need to go back to your writing workshop and there needs to be more of a denouement. Feels like there's something missing at the end of that.
What? Fingering isn't enough?
Is it ever enough?
That's it for this week's Sticky Pickles. If we made you smile, you know what to do. Subscribe and review.
Oh, man. And you can get in touch with us on social media. We are at Sticky Pickles on Twitter and at Sticky Pickles Pod on Instagram. And why the hell, why not? You can even email us at hello@stickypickles.com. Curl, are you actually checking that email address? Okay.
Yes. If you can compete with that, we're in. See you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was like a whiplash. Talking about career stuff, bitching about people lying in a job interview, and then somebody choking on egg roll and getting fingered. I mean, my God. The peaks and valleys of this episode hurt.
It's nice to be a free woman in the free world. Hallelujah.
We would have been just drowned or burned like 100 years ago
yep.
for just being such total deviants.
There's progress.
Yeah, God bless it.
God bless.